Would you open your Bibles with me to Romans, the 12th chapter? Many times we think of the idea of following Christ as the idea of being able to endure all kinds of hardships, being able to overcome all kinds of sins. But in reality, that being part is not the sum total. We've been studying in the book of Romans, the 12th chapter, various aspects of service to God and following Him. I'm going to read in verses 10 through 14 some thoughts that Paul gives about our service to God. Be kindly affectionate to one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another, not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. As you read the list here, and there are other things we've read in the 12th chapter, you find that indeed there are some things in these passages that require a great deal of uprightness against all that Satan would throw at us. But then he also gives some very practical aspects, some kind of ordinary things that we need to be doing as children of God that give God service, honor, and praise. And as we consider the matter of serving done right, we look at the first thing that's presented in the study this morning as we specifically are looking at verses 13 and 14. And it's the matter of benevolence. The benevolence that God requires of you and I in our Christian walk. And again, oftentimes these kinds of sermons aren't the type that elevate us above sin in the sense of those things that we'll not do that Satan would want us to do. But they are nonetheless part of bearing the cross. They are nonetheless part of our service to God and our service to one another. And so the Apostle Paul encourages us in the matter of benevolence, in the matter of being willing to care for other saints and care for those who might be strangers. As we consider the text, specifically verse 13, as he says, distributing to the needs of the saints, we're talking then about this command to distribute. And what it requires of us is a willingness and an ability to share what we have with others, to have ourselves open to their needs, to allow ourselves to be receptive to their needs, not to be individuals that simply close our eyes and say, there are a lot of sins I'm not committing, but I don't see anything that I can be doing for others, when in fact, there may be things right before us. And so the Apostle Paul says we need indeed to have that positive attitude that says, I'm going to share the things I have in common with those around me. I'm going to be willing to distribute the needs that they might have. It may be a simple thing like food. It may be clothing. It may be a place to stay. I'm going to be willing to make preparation within my life to fulfill the needs that might arise in others. I think we often delegate those to trivial things that probably will never come up in our lives, because God has blessed us with prosperity in this nation. God has blessed us with prosperity among us as children of God here at Middleburg. Even when things get tough for some people financially, it's so much more than what the people in the third world or other parts of this country that are less fortunate than us may have. And so it's easy for us to relegate this whole idea of benevolence to some back row thing that we might do someday. And I would hope that at the end of the service today, what we would recognize is that this is as much a command for me, and I must make preparation for this as much as anything else in my life. I would suggest to you that at the end of today's lesson, there will be a challenge before us that not only do we make preparation to come to church, not only do we make preparation to sing our songs of praise to God, but we make preparation within our lives, within our budgets, within our way of living that says, if a need arises, I'll be there to help those who are in need. That we'll not be in a position where we say, I'd like to help, but that won't be acceptable to us if we're going to take up our cross and follow the Lord. It will not be an excuse acceptable any more than looking at some sin and saying, Lord, I just never thought about it and went ahead into it. I knew it was sin, but I didn't make preparation. God's going to say, make preparation to avoid the sins. He's also going to tell us, make preparation to be proactive in carrying out what He wants us to be doing. And so the command is presented for us. The command is presented for us to be willing to be benevolent to saints, to be willing to distribute to their needs. The command is very close to us. It's very specific to us. And then we need to look at it being exemplified. Let's look at it being exemplified on an individual basis as needs arose among the saints there in the first century on the day of Pentecost. People had come from all over the world to celebrate the Jewish feast of Pentecost, but instead they found out about the good news of Jesus Christ and that the Messiah had come and died for them. Some were even accused of specifically killing the Messiah. And their response was to repent. And all the saints stayed there to hear the gospel, to hear the good news, and to grow in the knowledge of the Lord. And some of them ran out of money. What we find is that the saints there had all things in common, as said there in Acts 2, beginning in verse 44. Now all who believed were together and had all things in common, and sold the possessions and goods and divided them among all, as anyone had need. That sense of community fulfilling the needs of one another is something clearly illustrated on our responsibility to be willing to help and care one for another. As you continue reading in the book of Acts, you'll notice there are instances where the needs continued to be there and they continued to meet the needs. You even find that they got to the point where there arose some friction among themselves over the care for the Grecian widows. That was dealt with among the brethren. In all of these illustrations, what we find is that the early church, and by that I mean within its infancy of the first months and years, were concentrating on hearing the gospel and living a giving life to one another. That's how important it is before God that we have that attitude. We even find that after that, the gospel was beginning to spread throughout the nations. And Christians again were reminded, when a need arises, be a part of fulfilling the need. In the 11th chapter of Acts, beginning in verse 27, it's recorded, in these days, prophets came from Jerusalem to Antioch. Then one of them, named Agabus, stood up and showed by the Spirit that there was going to be a great famine throughout all the world, which also happened in the days of Claudius Caesar. Then did the disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. This they also did, and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. They understood clearly that they needed to be willing to open their hearts and open their wallets to the needs of other Christians. That's part of following Jesus. That's part of following the Lord. They understood that responsibility. Paul wrote in Romans, the 15th chapter, "But now I am going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints. For it pleased those from Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor among the saints who are in Jerusalem." This problem arose once and again throughout the time of the first century church. And it's addressed very specifically to the fact that Gentiles who had never and would never meet the Jews back in Palestine, they gave of their goods to help those saints that were in need. It's all part of that service to God. It's something that's noble and expected. There in 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter, Ollie alluded to it as we laid by in store this morning with the collection. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you must also do. On the first day of the week, let every one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. It was the idea of purposing to help others who are in need. It's a noble thing to do. I think oftentimes we think of it as somewhat insignificant. Time-wise, it takes up very little of our assembly. But the importance of the attitude, the importance of the willingness to share with those who might be in need, has to be first and foremost within our minds. The importance of sharing that we might spread the gospel has to be first and foremost within our minds. The collection that's spoken of here specifically was regarding the needy saints in other places. But this principle certainly stands true to the spreading of the gospel, to the accomplishing of the going forth into all the world that is bestowed upon each and every one of us. We notice also the command as it is being exercised as a collection upon the first day of the week. We understand it then as a responsibility that we have, and we also understand there are certain limitations that are put forth. The collection is to be taken up indeed, but on a congregational basis, there were such restrictions with regard to the caring of widows. We read over in 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, there were certain requirements. They had to be over the age of 60. They had to have taken care of individuals that were in need. In other words, they showed good works. They brought up children, as is mentioned here. They were individuals who had showed hospitality. Do you suppose that as the Christians of the first century were living their daily lives, that they were understanding the importance of being willing to take care of one another, to take care of those who are in need? Absolutely. I don't think there was an attitude among them of the self-sufficiency that we often possess that says, hey, I stand on my own, I take care of myself. Their commerce, their circumstance was probably a lot different than ours. We as Americans have taken on the I've pulled myself up by the bootstraps, or I've been able to do this and I've accomplished that. We inadvertently become like that rich man that said, I will build bigger barns and I will. I think perhaps in the first century, the level of poverty and the lack of materialism among them made for a greater sense of benevolence among themselves. While we prosper, and while we do not experience and see the poverty that they would have seen at that time, nonetheless, we must foster that attitude of saying, I too have a benevolent spirit within me. He goes on to mention the fact that they were to refuse the younger widows. If any believing man or a woman has widows, let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened, that it also may relieve those who are really widows. The point was, take care of your own. Be responsible for them. Don't be dismissive of the needs of your physical family. We find that Paul tells them in 2 Thessalonians, The command basically is this. We are to be individuals who work. He goes on and he makes the point, indeed, if someone will not work, neither should he eat. So it isn't, and we want to make this point, it isn't that we are simply to have the attitude that our life, our goods, are just open to everybody. And anybody who wants to shirk their responsibilities, well, we'll pick up their needs while they shirk their responsibilities. Not that at all. And from the scriptures, we clearly see there is to be that sense of work, that sense of involvement, that sense of striving to take care of your own. I think from that passage and some others, what we see is that there has to be a balance. And that balance makes sure that we don't become an enabler to somebody who doesn't want to work. Somebody who simply wants to freeload off of society. That's not acceptable before God either. And so there must be that balance as we consider these responsibilities. Looking at 2 Corinthians, there in the 8th chapter, Paul writes to them, "For if there is first a willing mind, it is accepted according to what one has, and not according to what he does not have. For I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but by an equality, that now at this time your abundance may supply their lack, that their abundance also may supply your lack, that there may be equality. As it is written, he who taketh, or he who gathereth much had nothing left over, and he who gathereth little had no lack." The point again is that indeed we have a willingness to assist, but it's going to be based upon our ability. It's going to be based upon opportunity. Paul told the Galatians in chapter 6 and verse 10, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially those who are of the household of faith." The point we're making is that it is an attitude that we develop early in our Christianity that says, "I'm willing to share. I'm willing to help those who are in need and those who have needs before them as I have opportunity and within my abilities." Two things. One, this passage doesn't require us, and these passages don't require us to go looking. To say, "I've got to find somebody in the world that I can help and give money to." But these passages also tell us that we don't close our eyes and say, "Well, I see no one in need. I see no one that I can be helping." We need to have that benevolent spirit within us. And if we have that benevolent spirit within us, there will be times when we will see a need and we will respond to it. Switching now to the next verse, there's another aspect of Christianity that again isn't a case of, "Oh, look at all these sins you need to avoid, and look at all this you need to be going out and doing and spreading the gospel." It's the idea that service done right requires hospitality. God demands it of us. God requires it of us. Look at the command that's given there in verse 14. At the end of verse 13. "Given to hospitality." The idea of given is the idea of pursuing. It isn't the idea, if you're forced into the situation, be hospitable. It is the idea that you're to be proactive in that hospitality. It is the idea that you are an individual who is willing to hunt and chase the opportunity for hospitality. Robertson's Word Pictures actually uses that as part of the definition of being given to, as he calls it, pursuing, as if in a chase or a hunt. And so the requirement there in verse 13 is to be given to in the hunt of pursuing the opportunities to do what? To be a lover of strangers. That's the idea of hospitality in its narrowest definition. It certainly expresses then a willingness on our part, a willingness and an ability to cheerfully entertain those who are strangers. Think about it for just a moment and recognize how these things go together. Previously, in the earlier in that verse, distributing to the needs of saints. And now the idea of one who is given to hospitality. In both instances, it's the idea of a sharing in what we have. It's opening ourselves up and the things we have to those around us. And so really, these two points go hand in hand, and we need to recognize then the duty that is enjoined upon us in Scripture in the practicing of hospitality. Look at a couple of passages in Hebrews, the 13th chapter and verse 2. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Almost every time I've been involved in any real discussions with people about this verse, you know where they want to center? You know what they want to concentrate on? Angels. So let's talk about entertaining angels. Let's talk about the meaning of angels, and what about angels today? And where did angels come from? And let's look at blah, 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 blah. And I'm not blah, 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 blahing angels at all. I'm talking about the fact that we'll get all caught up in that discussion on this verse. And what do we forget? The first part. Do not forget to entertain strangers. If we had as much discussion when we come to this verse, and I don't mean we now, but we with people that I've had discussions with them, if we had as much discussion on the first half of this verse as takes place on the last half and the last word of this verse, we'd probably have a greater awareness of a responsibility to being willing and being obedient to the command of hospitality. This is something God expects of us. We can name again, I've said this a couple of times for emphasis, not because I'm a forgetful person that repeats. We can name all kinds of sins we're not to be involved in as we follow Jesus. And we can name all kinds of things about going and preaching the gospel, etc., 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 as we follow Jesus. But the idea of entertaining strangers, the idea of practicing hospitality, that's way, way, way in the back of obligations and responsibilities God will ever ask of us. 1 Peter 4, verse 9 says, be hospitable to one another without grumbling. A moment ago, we defined hospitality in its most strict sense of lovers of strangers. I've known of one person, there may be others as well, but I knew of one gentleman when I was a small boy who argued that while no member of the congregation had ever been in his house, he was qualified to be an elder because if we ever had a stranger show up, he would invite them home. His argument was, hospitality is a lover of strangers. None of you are strangers. He never carried it to the point, i.e., I don't have to love you, but his point was, so I'm not responsible to interact with you in my home or on a social level. I was a boy at the time, and I never did ask anybody, how did he explain 1 Peter 4:9? Be hospitable to one another. Obviously, the hospitality isn't limited to strangers. I do remember my father and some others arguing with this man, making the point with this man, are we to believe that you won't open your house to those you know, but you will open your house to someone you don't know? Their point was, that seems hard to believe. And that's true. That does seem hard to believe. The point here in 1 Peter 4 is clearly a command to me in relation to you. And it's a command to you in relation to each other. And it's a command to you in relation to me. And so we have the responsibility. I'll take up my cross and follow you, Jesus. I just won't let anybody follow me into my house. Or I just won't find a social setting to interact with others and be hospitable to them. I recognize we can be hospitable at some place, not necessarily in my home. Circumstance may be such that that's just not physically possible. But I can show hospitality in a number of ways, not limited to, but including the idea of opening my house to them. These scriptures make it quite clear. We often talk about the fact, clearly, it's a requirement for those who would be bishops within the church, those who would be elders within the church, pastors, overseers, all of those names reference the same office. It's clearly evident for those who would be widows that would be supported from the treasury of the church if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet. But indeed, what we find not only besides these passages and responsibilities is, as we said from 1 Peter, the responsibility, and from Romans, the 12th chapter, here in verse 13, the responsibility is before each and every one of us that we be willing today to entertain friends and relatives, that we be willing to heartily show the biblical attitudes of hospitality, denoting that special virtue. By today, I am not referencing specifically the fact that this is a holiday in which many people will have their family into their homes. And nothing like this will happen again until next year. Not talking about this particular day. I'm talking about each and every one of us as we have opportunity practicing hospitality with those around us. We indeed can take an example from the various things that are taught about in Scripture. The example of Abraham, as you go back to Genesis, the 18th chapter, and indeed, these messengers were coming, and Abraham killed the calf and prepared a meal and invited them in. He showed them hospitality. Lot did the same as those messengers came to him there is in Sodom as they were about to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Lot showed that willingness to be hospitable. Job says with all the things that were said against him or questions that were raised about his character, the fact of the matter was he took care of those in need. He took care of those who were strangers. And these all stand as examples for us of those practicing hospitality. When you go over to 3 John, you'll notice in 3 John there in verses 5 through 8 that John was complimenting Gaius for his willingness to care for the strangers and to send them on their way, those who were preaching the gospel, those who were Christians who were passing through. We have that responsibility as well. The responsibility is before us. The principle is before us. We must have the principle that says we will pursue hospitality to the best of our ability. That we will seek opportunities to be hospitable with one another. We indeed will pursue hospitality because we'll be prepared to be hospitable to one another. I think oftentimes the grumbling that arises within us about the responsibility of hospitality is the grumbling because we don't want to make preparation. That cannot be if we're going to take up our cross and follow Him. And sometimes we may say, I'd rather be persecuted than to be hospitable. The fact is, God's not going to be impressed with our willingness to be persecuted and our unwillingness to show hospitality to one another. That's how serious this matter is. Within the practice of hospitality, there are ways to overcome a number of objections that can arise. Somebody may say, well, I just don't have the space to be hospitable for this person or that person, or if this circumstance or that circumstance arose. It isn't that it may be within our house. It may be a person doesn't have the space to be open to those who are strangers. But we must be willing to make accommodations someplace for them. When push comes to shove, that's part of being hospitable. Now, that doesn't mean that what I'm saying is, Joe, if somebody really has a need for a place to stay, I'll send them over to your house. Well, if the Lord wills, then do that, and I'll do the best I can to provide them a place to stay. It may be that I may need to make reservations, plans at a hotel or motel for them. Then I do that. I believe that's still part of my willingness to be hospitable. It is because we make plans that we think about it. I came across an idea that I'd really never thought about before, and I haven't yet put this into practice, though I may do it. I'm going to do it. Now I'm going to try to do it. Somebody talked about the idea, you know how these people are always coming up and they're just wanting money from you. And I think a number of us have already learned over the years, I'll take somebody and feed them, whether at my home or at a restaurant. The potential is before us. The potential is there for evangelism. The potential is there for strengthening one another as we engage in and practice hospitality as God would have us to do. The first century Christians understood hospitality. We sometimes fail to understand it for a couple of reasons. We understand that we have great hotels and motels throughout the country, and traveling from place to place, we stay and make preparations in those places. So the ideas of strangers coming to our house to stay aren't a common occurrence to us. We live in a society where there's some degree of danger as to allowing a stranger into your house because there are nefarious activities going on. With those kinds of negatives, it doesn't change our responsibility before God to be prepared to practice hospitality, distributing to the needs of the saints. And practicing hospitality are indeed things that we need to have within our lives as part of who we are. And so I would hope each one of us would seek and find those opportunities to practice hospitality, to be willing to distribute to the needs of others as they arise. Would you open your songbooks to the song of encouragement, please?